Hi, my name's Salma. My whole life I've been hyper aware of my mortality. At least once a day, I'll think about how fleeting my life will be compared to Earth's timeline. I mean, even if I live until I'm like 120, that'll still be an insignificant blink compared to all the years that came before I was born and all the ones that'll come long after I die. This is why I spend most of my time reading. I don't want to just live one life. It's like George Martin writes in A Dance with Dragons. A reader lives 1,000 lives before he dies, but the man who never reads lives only one. A few years ago, I came across a picture that read, "You will die before you read every book you've ever encountered." That was the moment my escapist hobby turned into an all-consuming mission, and I'd like to bring you along this obsessive journey. So, every Tuesday, I post a review of the book I read that week. And once a month, I bring on a special guest to talk about books we've read. You're listening to the 15-Minute Book Club. So the novel I'm looking at this week is Prophet Song by Paul Lynch. I saw it at three different bookstores advertised as the Booker Prize winner of 2023. And by the fourth time I saw it, I just thought, okay, I'm going to have to buy this and read it because it's everywhere. I guess the marketing and the PR really just wore me down. So it's a dystopian novel set in Ireland. It's about a secret police or like a seems to be like a political party as well, but mainly a secret police called the GNSB. And they start to gain control in Ireland. And they're kind of like the Soviet Union's KGB in a way. The whole book is narrated from the perspective of a woman named Eilish, who has four kids. At the very beginning of the novel, her husband is taken away by the GNSB because he's part of the workers' union. So for the rest of the novel, she's basically trying to hold the family together and navigate all the chaos that's going on around her while Ireland is essentially slipping into an all-out civil war. The way that the novel is written is a bit interesting, but also quite strange. I haven't come across any novels with a similar structure. Basically, each section of each chapter is written in one long paragraph. Like, there are no line breaks, there are no quotation marks for dialogue, so it is a bit trippy to read. But after I got the hang of it, I found it quite interesting. Like, the structure doesn't make it difficult to read, even though you'd think that it would. So Paul Lynch was at the Cambridge Literary Festival last week, and I attended the event. He was in conversation with Alex Clark, and I'm going to be really honest, he came across as being quite Hollywood. I don't know what the right expression is, but he was a bit suave and very kind of like media comfortable, so to speak. He did mention that was like event number 170 of all the media events that he's had to do since it was announced that his novel won the Booker Prize. And even when he read from his book at the event, he read in iambic pentameter. And like, I teach English literature, so I understand the importance and significance of the iambic pentameter. But at the same time, like, I really just wanted to be like, bro, this ain't the 16th century. Watching him during the event really made me think about how I don't remember where I saw this, but I remember one time reading about how, like, power can change the chemical construct of the brain, or it can cause, like, chemical changes in your brain. Like, power can actually change people. So he seemed to have a bit of an inflated ego. I don't know, like, it just feels like it's also quite normal if he's been exposed to so many media events and he's just at this point kind of well seasoned and all that. Like, when it was the audience turned to ask him questions, there was a woman in the audience that pointed out that in his novel, the main character Eilish, who's a mother of four, is kind of like trying to keep the family together, and it's like in the midst of all this chaos. And he had mentioned earlier that he had to kind of stay away from his kids for a while in order to write. As she was asking this question, the audience was applauding her and people were laughing. So she asked him if he could comment on parenting approaches between men and women, and he paused and said, "Well, my relationship with my kids is none of your business." And I was a bit shocked. I thought, like, bro, come on, like, just answer the question. Also, he dropped in the conversation like at least three times that he meditates. I taught yoga for a number of years, and I used to notice this with people who start to get into meditation. They just drop it in conversations all the time. And he just he mentioned it so many times. He kept saying how, as a meditator, or being a meditator, or I'm really into that sort of thing. And like mentioned how, like, the day that he won the Booker Prize team like drags you out of bed in the morning and you have to go and do all of these media events. And he said that he had to do, I don't know, something crazy, like 40 media events or media interviews in like the span of 48 hours or maybe even less. And he mentioned how, like, he had to take 10-minute breaks in between to meditate. And I just thought, that's such a, like, thing that someone who just learned to meditate would do. Which, I'm not judging. I'm just saying, like, I did roll my eyes a lot during this interview. I will say, though, one of the positive things that I totally agreed with him that he said was that English degrees all over the country try to push or try to force the single lens in critical theory, while authors really just want to be read on their own terms. And I wanted to get up and like slow clap because I teach English literature and I always struggle to do that with my students because I have to teach my students critical theory in literature. And I always think it's stupid. I always think it's extremely outdated. And they also find it difficult and struggle with kind of adapting these really old critical theories that have some value and some significance in critical theory. But at the same time, it's like, come on, like, let's just evolve and like try to look a little bit outside of the box for once. I'm sure literature teachers will understand what I'm talking about. The novel is extremely realistic. So, like, the mother's denial and insistence on staying in the country. He mentions how women are extremely resilient, and he wanted to show that through Eilish and her insistence on staying in Ireland, even though everything around them is just falling apart. And Eilish has a sister who lives in Canada that says to her, "History is a silent record of people who did not know when to leave." And even her own father, who's in Ireland with her, and she's insisting on not leaving also because she can't leave her father behind, and he's slowly falling into dementia. He even has these moments of clarity and sobriety and says to her, like, you have to take the kids and leave. And not to spoil the ending or anything, but she definitely should have left when she had the chance. Like, literally everyone is telling her to leave, but she just keeps going until there's nothing left. The author mentions how in the middle of the Syrian refugee crisis a few years ago, when all over the news you were seeing sort of images of refugees getting in boats, and he mentioned how, like, just like everybody else, he was wondering why people were going into these boats and risking their lives and risking their children's lives. And he shows that with Eilish, and he shows the level of desperation that you get to have to do something like that. He manages to reflect how you only do something like that when every aspect of your identity has fallen apart in where you live and where you are. There are two parts in the novel that I got chills while I was reading. The first one I actually want to read out to you. So this is near the end of the book, and it ties into why the book is called Prophet Song. So this is Eilish reflecting on the state of the country near the end of the book. She can see that the world does not end, that it is vanity to think the world will end during your lifetime in some sudden event, that what ends is your life and only your life. That what is sung by the prophets is but the same song sung across time. The coming of the sword, the world devoured by fire, the sun gone down into the earth at noon, and the world cast in darkness. The fury of some god incarnate in the mouth of the prophet, raging at the wickedness that will be cast out of sight. And the prophet sings not of the end of the world, but of what has been done and what will be done, and what is being done to some but not to others. That the world is always ending, over and over again in one place but not another, and that the end of the world is always a local event. It comes to your country and visits your town and knocks on the door of your house and becomes to others but some distant warning, a brief report on the news, an echo of events that has passed into folklore. At the event, Paul mentions this, and he talks about the idea that in each generation, people always assume that the world is going to end in their lifetime, and how this is quite an arrogant notion. And he says that the end of the world, it's not a singular event, it's something that's happening all the time, but for many of us, it's happening somewhere else. It's a distant event that we see perhaps on the news, but it doesn't necessarily knock on our door. The other part of the book that I thought was extremely powerful and touching is Eilish's youngest son, Ben, is still an infant. But there are two incidences where she's holding him as the bombs fall outside all over their neighborhood, and there's sounds of guns and bullets being shot and fired, and it just penetrates everything. And she thinks to herself while she's holding him how he's not going to remember this, but his body will carry it for the rest of his life. So if I could be anyone in the world of this novel, I'd probably want to be the grandfather, so Eilish's father. I don't know, I think because of his dementia and him going in and out of awareness, he's not completely aware of what's going on around him, and in some ways that probably means that he's the one suffering the least out of all the characters in the novel. Which is interesting because this kind of reminds me of what I was talking about last week with Flowers for Algernon, about the idea of awareness and is ignorance actually bliss. Thanks for listening to the 15 Minute Book Club. If you want to be part of the conversation, follow 15 Min Book Club on Instagram. For all the books and materials mentioned in this episode, check the description. And remember, keep reading, because who knows, you might die tomorrow.